You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Put the bunny back in the box.
I knew you was a punk, and I was right. You've been playing us all along. You a free man.
I said, put the bunny back in the box.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 80 for the 21st of March, 2012. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Richard Gray. How are you, Richard?
I am incredibly well, David, and very tired.
Seems to be a recurring theme since we've ever started this show way, way back in 2008. The people always go, I'm very tired. And speaking of tired, Josh, we had to rearrange schedules and stuff to talk about because we had to go see a screening last night. And so Josh had to do his other show tonight, the Raw DLC show. So he won't be joining us tonight, unfortunately. So it's just you and me tonight, Richard.
Absolutely, and we did go and see a screening last night. It was a tiny little film called The Hunger Games.
And when are we embargoed till? I can't tell.
What was that?
They didn't make me sign anything. When are we embargoed till?
We're embargoed until the day of release, which is in about an hour and 10 minutes from when we record this show.
Fantastic. So by the time you people are listening to this, we can talk about it.
Absolutely.
And we will talk a little bit about it, but it is actually our featured film for next week, so we will come back to it in more detail next week. This is Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of geekactually.com, and this week we are going to review, and I do apologize for the American listeners because they already had it a few weeks ago, but we are going to be reviewing Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, and in homage of Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, our list of five this week will be five of our favorite batshit performances.
All of them by Nicolas Cage.
Almost. I almost did that with my list. I almost made a Nicolas Cage list. I thought that's too easy.
Yes. I mean, and I'll play a clip just before we do our list demonstrating just how often Nicolas Cage loses his shit.
That's not that YouTube video going around, is it?
It is, indeed.
Fair enough. We also have a clip. We have what kind of Nicolas Cage heavy? I mean, we opened the show with Nicolas Cage as well. We put the bunny back in the box. But let's move on a little bit so we can talk about what we've been watching. But before we do that, oh man, I forgot to line this up. We'll grab this really quickly. We got some feedback. And
right.
I just want to do this really quickly because it is an answer to last week. If you remember, you're going to hear a ding because my machine's going to try and check its mail now. You watch. It'll happen. but if you remember last week, we got that wonderful feedback from I don't remember what his name was now. But anyway, the fuckity-fuck guy.
His name was Fuck You All or something.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway. Long-time listener and actually has been a guest on our old Geek Actually show, Matt White, actually sent us an email this week. And I just wanted to read this to you because it actually almost made me spit out my breakfast when I was reading it. He actually says, wow, guys, wow. He says, that's all I can say. You really know how to silence a room. He says, I know you carry the explicit tag, but it hasn't been tested. It hasn't been tested too much until last week's show. So there I was, merrily listening away to the podcast on my iPhone at work. But this time I had left my headphones at home, so the phone was just... So the phone was just sitting on my desk blaring away. Normally it can't be heard over the drone of a 24-hour transport office, but through some act of God, my phone was heard blaring fuck you, fuck, fuck, fuckity, fuck in the only quiet 15 seconds of the day. In the brief time between Michael Caine reading it and you repeating it, the last line, I was asked what I was listening to. So by then the office was totally quiet and Dave repeats the line. was just trying not to laugh when my boss agreed with the not safe for work warning that came after. been meaning to write to you for a while to tell you the funniest shows you've done for a while were the ones just before Christmas, which you must have done the real late night since you were telling us how tired you guys were and the shows just turned into soundboard fights.
We'll get ready for some real hilarity tonight.
Some of the best shows ever. You need to do all your shows late at night while high on coffee.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're in for a treat tonight, my friend.
Still loving the shows. Would be great to see them live again when work schedules allow, blah, blah, blah. And he goes on. So thank you very much, Matt. I'm very sorry.
I'm thrilled.
We do carry an explicit tag for that exact reason. We really aren't safe for work. We don't swear a lot, but when we do, it kind of comes fast and furious. So anyway, I just thought I would share that because I thought that was wonderful.
That's the best thing I've heard all week.
Me too. I gotta tell you, that feedback from what's his name on our site is like the gift that keeps on giving, isn't it? I love it.
I won't repeat the lie this week. Oh, fuck, fuck, fuckity, fuck you, fucking fuck. Just because I wouldn't want that to go off suddenly in Matt's workplace again. So just,
I think I need to take you as Michael Caine saying those lines and put it on the soundboard.
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't, David.
I will. I just haven't got to it yet. I did put this on the soundboard, though.
Put the bunny back in the box.
Absolutely.
Nicolas Cage is the gift that keeps on giving.
Always. All right. I've just turned over and I'm on the completely wrong soundboard. No, that's the right soundboard. That's good. Okay. What have we been watching? Richard, what have you been watching this week?
I've been watching theater. Well, apart from we watched Ghost Rider, Spirit of... I forgot the name of the movie. in the last week. That film, what we're reviewing tonight. Apart from watching that, and of course, as we already said, The Hunger Games last night.
Yep.
I also, for some reason, I may never understand, saw A Little Bit of Heaven, which came out about 14 months ago in the UK, came out at the cinema here, but hasn't come out in the States yet until May.
Help me out. Who's in this?
It's Kate Hudson.
Oh, I know this film, yes.
And Gael Garcia Bernal, I think.
Yep.
Is it him? I always get him mixed up.
It'd be kind of handy if we had a networked group of computers.
Computer network thing.
Where we could look things up.
Yeah. It's got Peter Dinklage in it as well.
I like him.
He's in it briefly. In a very funny role. No, it's Gael Garcia Bernal. And basically, long story short, she finds out she's dying of cancer and falls in love with a doctor.
Uh-huh. Sounds like a real uplifting film.
It is like the most... Oh, and Whoopi Goldberg plays God again.
Of course she does.
Yeah.
I think we need a film where we have Whoopi Goldberg and Morgan Freeman playing opposing gods. Ooh. Oh, remake of Clash of the Titans. There you go.
Oh, but they could do it like 1970s style and have like a black exploitation.
Oh, and they're going to both have huge froes.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to see this.
And Richard Roundtree has to be in there somewhere.
Absolutely. He'd be Perseus.
Oh, okay. Look, we're pitching this.
Oh, no. Perseus would have to be somebody like Chris Rock.
Yeah, it's true. And the Wayans would be involved in some stage.
Oh, man. I think we've just lost audience on this. We don't mean to sound racist. We really don't.
No. But seriously, this is not even racist. This film, you know it's going to get made at some stage.
I will go see it. You know what, though? It would be in the same vein, and it's already been done, and it's loved. It would be in the same vein. Do it as Black Dynamite.
Or no, but actually, it was more like the run of scary movies that they did.
Or that.
You know, any of those kind of things. Like, you know, these films are getting made. Like, you know, I totally envisage this film. I'm 100% behind it.
I think so. I think it's good. Okay. What else you been watching?
I've also been watching.
Now that we've gotten past the films that are the mythical films you've been watching.
I also saw an Australian film called Wish You Were Here, which comes out at the end of the month. Do we cover the fact that we saw the rain?
I'm sorry, you just kind of summed up the entire Australian film industry. That's the producer sitting at the cinema going, "We wish you were here."
Well, this film rather controversially tackles the difficult subject of angst in suburbia.
That sounds like a novel idea. We haven't done anything like that before.
Hasn't been tackled in Australian cinema at all before. Now, look, to be fair, this does actually take it out of the box and goes to Cambodia for a while. And there is a bigger storyline that's happening in there that is quite intriguing. I think the the way it ends is a little bit flat. Central performances are all incredibly good. Joel Edgerton is the lead actor in this, but they're all...
Of course he is. He's the only actor we've got left, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And he spends half of his time in the States. So we're going to lose him eventually. So it's... look, you know, it's okay.
But if that film doesn't have a line like this...
The power of the bone is the only thing that put them in Muspelheim hell.
I'm not interested.
Absolutely right. Did we mention, though, David, last week, and I can't remember, that we saw The Raid?
Oh, no, we didn't, actually.
We didn't talk about it
actually,
at all.
No, I think we may have seen The Raid the day after we recorded.
Right, okay, that's so why. We saw The Raid in the last week.
I actually didn't even put that in my notes either. That's just how much of an impact it had on me.
It's called The Raid Redemption.
Not here.
In the US.
Yeah, in the US, yeah, which I have no idea why. They've. What did they redeem?
I don't know. The Raid. Presumably.
Look, we are in the minority on this film because people seem to be loving this film right, left, and center. Everybody's raving. But we were talking to a whole bunch of our critic friends at the screening, last night even, and even after the Raid. And everybody loves this film, and they all think we're crazy. But I believe I speak for both of us when I say,
It was a long, slow, harsh. I mean, look, it's kind of a wait for DVD for me, but it is the action sequences themselves are kind of unsurpassed in terms of what they do. We haven't seen brutal.
They are fantastic. Like, no, that's not in debate at all.
And that's amazing. My problem with it is that it's relentless.
I would like a little bit of story with my action scenes.
It's a 90-minute action sequence.
It's a 90-minute computer game.
It's true. It's true. It's a 90-minute computer game you don't get to play.
Everything about what you and Josh criticized Battle of L.A. for, Battle of L.A., what's that thing called again? Anyway, you know that one. What you guys criticized for that.
One or
the big budget one. the big one. The one with Two-Face in it. Everything that you guys said about that and your criticisms for that are exactly what I feel about The Raid.
And I feel it about The Raid as well. So look, you know, as you said, David, you and I are in the minority for this one, but undoubtedly this is a big action film. And look, you know, in a lot of ways it will change. You look at The Raid and see, you know, the kind of movie that Hollywood will be aping for the next 2 years. So, you know, look, and it's already being remade, this film, so I don't know how that's going to work.
All the violence, none of the reading, I guess.
I guess so. Not that there was a lot of reading to do in it. And I just want to point out the director's Welsh.
Is he Welsh? I was wondering about the name because it's an Indonesian film. Mm. And they're all Indonesian actors. And then the guy who directed it, his name stands out.
Well, if memory serves, I was reading an article. He was filming a documentary in Indonesia and he met the lead actor and was so impressed with his skills that he ended up making a film around it, and that was Merantau, their previous film.
Oh, okay.
And this is their team up since then.
So he's decided to set up a little cottage industry in Indonesia.
Pretty much.
Fair enough. Whatever floats their boat, I guess.
And he's doing well for himself.
Sorry?
And the guy playing Mad Dog in that film, Yayan Ruyan, I think his name is, amazing.
Didn't he look like the Asian guy in Die Hard, though? You know, the one that he was also in Big Trouble in Little China. He's the one that was sitting at the candy bar and he's reaching in to steal the chocolate bar. he looks just
I don't
like
even remember him.
You don't remember him? I love that guy. He showed up in a lot of 80s films. He was always the token Asian guy in the background. He was always a badass.
Yeah.
And the guy in The Raid looks just like him.
The guy in The Raid's only been in those two films, this and
The guy from Die Hard would be too old to be doing that stuff anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
we'll look him up. Tell you what, let's in a couple of weeks' time do a tribute to that guy.
I think so. I think we need to do a tribute to the Asian guy in Die Hard.
That's what we'll call the episode.
Absolutely. Well, they'll wrap a whole special around it.
I don't even know how long we've been going, but we probably need to move this thing along.
I haven't given you what I've been watching this week.
Oh, okay, go on.
I'm just going to throw one of them out there because The Raid kind of took up a lot of time. I'm going to say I finally saw In Time.
Oh, right. And JT.
Yeah, that's the one. I missed this at the cinema because of scheduling conflicts and work and whatever. I mean, I just couldn't get to it. And I actually really wanted to see it because I liked the trailer. And then I was really kind of disappointed because everybody who was coming away from it was basically saying, oh, so it's crap. It's not very good. You know, it's just like these blanket statements that come out of, you know, the critic circle. But anyway, I finally sat and watched it. And it's not a great film. Yeah, I'll go that far. It's not a great film, but it's got a really, really, really interesting concept, really great idea, and it's not a terrible film either. And I kind of watched it going, it's all right. It could have been so much better. There's flaws in it, and you said they're glaring flaws, and when you watch it, you sit there and go, but why that, you know? But other than that, I actually didn't mind. I think it's because I really quite like the premise.
Here's an obscure factoid for you. The premise is based loosely on a Mandrake the Magician comic strip in which they traveled to a planet that dealt only in time.
Well, there you go.
So, I found that out because they announced that there was a Mandrake the Magician movie coming out.
Which, if you listen to Behind the Panels, you'd know all about.
Absolutely.
There you go. Shameless plug time.
Have you noticed how many times I say absolutely in an average show?
I know. And you know, I find it odd that everything is an absolute with you.
It is. I say absolutely a lot, and you say fantastic a lot.
I do.
I reckon if we played back a show and cut out all the other words, you just have absolutely fantastic.
We just call an episode absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic. We make it like an absolutely fabulous episode. I don't know which one would be Patsy and which one would be Eddie.
You know, I think we need...
Darling, absolutely. Darling.
I think we actually need Josh here. He keeps us in check.
All right, guys, let's move along.
Well, we don't have Josh to do a bargain basement film this week, which is a bit of a disappointment. But we do have a feature film, which is kind of a bargain basement film anyway. So...
It's everyone wins. Really.
So let's rock straight into this and say this week we are going to be reviewing Ghost Rider, The Spirit of Vengeance. No, it's actually not The Spirit of Vengeance. It's just Spirit of Vengeance. They decided to drop the out. So it's just Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. And this is directed this time by Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor, who are responsible for the Crank films and Gamer.
Better known as Neveldine/Taylor.
Neveldine/Taylor, absolutely. And when I mentioned this to my mother, she thought there was actually three directors because she thought it was Neville, Dean, and Taylor. And I had to explain to her that, no, Neville Dean is actually one word. Anyways, so this time round, the script is actually written by Scott M. Gimple. What a name. Scott M. Gimple, Seth Hoffman, and David S. Goyer based on his story. Now, rumor has it around that this is actually supposed to be the first Ghost Rider. David S. Goyer was credited as a story for the first Ghost Rider as well. And he says that this was actually the script that was originally submitted. Well, not this one, because this was obviously rewritten by Gimple and Hoffman. They opted not to do that because, what's his name? The Daredevil guy. He's got a triple
barrel. Stephen Johnson.
That's the one. He's got a triple barrel name. Too many names for one person. Give some away. He basically wrote his own script.
Right.
And we saw how that turned out. Anyway, so apparently this was kind of like giving rebirth to Goyer's original idea. Whether it was worth the wait or not, we'll find out in a few minutes.
Yes.
This one stars again Nicolas Cage coming back as Johnny Blaze. Violenta Placido, who I think is, quite frankly, absolutely gorgeous. She's a heartthrob to me. Karen Hines, Idris Elba. Anybody else in here worth talking about?
Christopher Lambert.
Christopher Lambert Christoph Lambert and Anthony Head from Buffy.
Johnny Whitworth.
Who's Johnny Whitworth when he's in town?
Oh, I don't know, but he's in the film.
Okay.
I think he plays the other bad guy.
Oh, okay. And who's the kid? Do we know?
Oh, the kid is... I had that in front of me just a moment ago. His name is Fergus Rorden.
Fergus Rorden, whatever.
I think it's Rorden, yeah.
All right. So, according to IMDb, I could sum this up by saying a man with a flaming head takes out the bad guys. But according to IMDb, it says, as Johnny Blaze hides out in Eastern Europe, let's start there, he is called upon to stop the devil who is trying to take human form. That's not the film I saw, is it?
No,
that's not the film. That's not the film I saw. Anyway, roughly, that's kind of it. Let's have a look at the trailer. We will come back and we will talk about Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance.
This thing, there's no conscience, just hunger.
The rider's going to come out. And when he does, he'll destroy whoever's got it coming.
He'll take on a new form. One more powerful than he's ever known.
Okay, so there's a trailer for you. And what happens if you have to pee, Richard?
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was awesome.
I haven't seen flaming urine since, I think, Friday the 13th. Not Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street 4 or 5.
And it's cut in at that point, and it's completely irrelevant to anything else in the film.
Yeah, like it's...
What you see in the trailer there is all you see of it. It's like, okay then. All right, so Richard, what did you think of Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance?
Well, look, you know, I didn't dislike the first one. So I was kind of starting off at a point where I was a little bit excited about this. And I wanted it to be, you know, a good, big, dumb action film with a guy with a flaming skull.
Yes.
And it, you know, Ghost Rider's always gotten by on his looks to some extent. Like, you know, he's not an attractive man, but he's a dude in a leather jacket on a motorbike with a flaming skull, for God's sake.
It's about imagery.
He's got a bit of cool cachet.
Yeah.
This guy. So look, you know, that gets you through the first act of this film. But then you kind of need something a bit more than that to carry on. Now, as we said, you know, the presence of David S. Goyer, who's already he's got a lot of comic book credibility. So he's already scripted Batman Begins, which should be enough. But he did the first the Blade trilogy, and he directed the third one. He's written the script for the forthcoming Man of Steel, but he also did the late 90s, he also did another script, and it's gone out of my head for the moment, but he's got a lot of comic book cachet at the moment, so you'd think that was you know, something worth watching. But unfortunately, I think it's more the other two people, Scott M. Gimple and Seth Hoffman, who are in there. I just remembered what the other film was that he scripted. In 1998, was Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, did he write that?
He wrote that,
yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
He wrote that. That was with David Hasselhoff before Nick Fury was a really cool-looking black guy with a eye patch.
Before he was a puffy alcoholic.
Who's puffy, I loved it in that movie,
who's
too,
popular like, in Germany.
I loved it in that movie, too. Lisa Rinner is his right-hand woman. Anyway, you'd think, you know, David S. Goyer, I don't think there's a lot of him in this script. So, I mean, look, the action itself starts off as being quite impressive. And there's some of those, you know, typically batshit crazy crank moments in there. But I don't know, even some of those, even though they were kind of pushed up to 11, disappointed. Like, I didn't find that they really wowed me that much. And there was a sense of urgency to the film. The film just kept moving the whole time.
But that's what Neville Dean and Taylor do.
But there was no, like, to what end? Like, there was no sense of cohesion. It's kind of like, okay, we're going off to this place now. It's like, why? Because we're going there, people.
Absolutely. Keep up. Everything.
And then, you know, that kind of results in things getting all blow-up-y, you know, at some point.
But for no apparent reason either. Look,
I can tell I've just read 40 issues of Buffy.
Yeah, exactly. Your entire vernacular has changed.
But, you know, the one thing that does save this, and we're obviously going to talk about this a bit later in the show with our list, which is naturally going to feature Nicolas Cage. His kind of innate sense to hone in on line readings that in some countries would be considered cruel and unusual is what kind of saves this, you know, when he just goes off the rails, you know, just for no apparent reason, you know. But technically the film actually looks good, you know, and Ghost Rider himself actually looks awesome. It's particularly given that a lot of this is flame work done during the day.
Yeah. No, I give it full credit and full marks for its visual effects work.
But this is like a film with ADHD.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. Look, I actually thought the film was pretty ordinary. I didn't hate it. I actually, funnily enough, didn't hate it, but I agree with you. It actually makes the first Ghost Rider look really good. I didn't hate the first Ghost Rider. I admit, and look, before you send any emails in fuckity fuck fucks and all that sort of stuff, I know the original Ghost Rider is actually not a great film. All right, I know that, all right? But I'm a huge comic book geek, and seeing Ghost Rider put on screen with his flaming head and the motorbike and the whole bit is just cool, you know?
Yeah, no, look, and that's the thing. I agree with you. It is just cool.
And I think that in many ways, the first film actually did it better. It was truer to the comic book. Although
you had Peter Fonda in a motorcycle film.
And you had Peter Fonda in a motorcycle film. Funny that. And you had Sam Elliott as another writer. Come on.
Yeah. And you had Eva Mendez.
Eva Mendez. Don't get me started on Eva Mendez. But you also had that amazing shot, which had Ghost Rider on his motorbike and Sam Elliott on his horse, and they're both on fire riding across the plain. I mean, it's got some really good stuff in the first one, and the fact that he rides up the side of a building and stuff like that, which is very much in the vein of the comic book. In this film, it's like they're skirting a weird edge where they're basically saying we want to make it more realistic because they don't do any of that weird supernatural stuff like drive up the sides of buildings. You know what I mean?
No, instead, but they do have a guy on fire.
No, but they have this guy on fire. Exactly. So it's this, like you said, you didn't say this. It's like it's bipolar because it's trying to make itself this realistic action film, cutting down the more fantastical elements, but you still can't get away from the fact that it's a fantastical concept in the first place.
It's kind of like Nicolas Cage is... Nicolas Cage, let's we forget, is an Oscar winner.
For
that performance, deservedly so. I mean, he was a good actor up until
to be fair, Leaving Las Vegas is a dark and gritty and in many ways brilliant film for performances. I actually didn't like the film very much. I thought it was very depressing.
The book is brilliant because the guy who wrote it killed himself not long afterwards. Mm. So obviously it was a very personal book.
Absolutely.
But the film is a performance piece, as you say.
It's a performance piece. And as far as performances go, both him and Elizabeth Shue have probably never been better.
No, exactly right. But the thing is, it's kind of like Nicolas Cage's Oscar winner is his Ghost Rider. It's the demon inside him, and he's been trying to desperately suppress this good actor inside him for the last 10 years, you know? And so he's trying to, and every now and then you can see it trying to come out, and he suppresses it with, "No, you won't! Bees!" You know? It's just, put the bunny back in the box.
Wait, this one you mean?
Put the bunny back in the box.
Yeah, there you go.
or you know, a little bit of this work. Hang on. Oh no, it's failed me.
You failed.
My remote sound.
Matt White will be mad at you.
A little bit of this work.
What is it? What is it? What is that? What is that? What is it? Oh no, not the beast! Not the beast! Ah! Oh, my eyes! Eyes! Ah! Ah!
Awesome.
That work. So when Nicolas Cage isn't being attacked by bees to suppress his Oscar winner, you know, he's an okay guy. But anyway, I mean, he did have a few moments in the last couple of years. He did Adaptation. He did a few other films.
Oh, Matchstick Men, I thought was great. You know.
You know. Yeah. Exactly. That all stuff like this. But he does. He needs to get a better agent, I think. And,
yeah, because for every Matchstick Men, we get The Knowing. You know.
Yeah. So. The thing is, he even looks. Even compared, like this is a movie where Kieran Hines has a face for most of the film that's across somewhere between a stroke victim and the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Well, he kind of vaguely walks around like he has no idea what's going on.
You know, so even with that, even with a clueless Kieran Hines, a bizarrely tattooed Christoph Lambert, even
again, I'm sorry, I think we have to at this moment, we have to just say, what's up?
Oh, yeah. There's a moment in the film, as Dave just alluded to, where Christopher Lambert and Nicolas Cage meet, and Cage just acknowledges him with a, what's up?
What's up?
It's the best moment in the whole film, I swear to God.
It is. It's so unexpected. It comes out of nowhere. It's fantastic.
So apart from that, but even compared to those two things, Nicolas Cage is the strangest thing in this film. You know, it's just, there are just very normal lines that he will read as though he's hearing those words for the first time.
and has no idea what the context of the words are.
It's kind of like all of his scenes were shot out of, without him having seen the script.
You can almost see him going and saying, no, I don't want to read the script in advance. You know? Just point me in the right direction.
Fresh.
Now, the
Neville, Dean, Taylor, all three of you. I don't want to.
You see him walking outside going, shit, there's only two of them.
Oh, man.
All right,
any complaints we get about this episode I'm reading is Nicolas Cage.
Absolutely. All right, so
fuck.
So with all of that being said, Richard, we got to go into the spoiler section because we got to talk about a few of the scenes.
Let's hope the spoiler door isn't stuck this week.
Did you oil it?
Let's find out if it's worked.
Before we do that, let's just wrap this up and basically say, now that we've heard everything that we've said, Richard, would you recommend this to people?
kind of. Like, I it's a qualified recommendal. It's definitely a rental. Like if you were down at the video store and you were kind of like, you'd gotten your other three for the price of two or something.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And you'd picked the other two.
So not a new release. You're talking about in the
Oh, maybe like actually, how about new release, 3 day hire.
Okay, or when it hits the like new release weekly section.
New release 3 day or new release weekly. So not your overnight new release because you want to spend some time with this film.
Fair enough. And would I recommend this to go to cinemas?
No.
This is not one to spend cinema dollars on. Even the 3D isn't particularly spectacular, even though it was actually shot in 3D.
That's weird.
It was actually shot in 3D, and the problem is I don't think Neville Dean Taylor's style actually works in 3D. It moves too fast.
Yeah.
They are too frenetic, and they don't give enough time. And 3D, actually, you have to slow down a little bit. Otherwise, it just becomes a blurry mess.
Definitely.
And I don't think their style actually equates to 3D very well. So I you're not missing anything by not seeing it in 3D. And I think you're right. I think this is a rental. This is wait and rent it. Look, for the comic book fans out there, and for the people who like good special effects, have a look at it. The firework in this is exceptional. And by far better than the second one, by far better than the first one as well, I should say, because over the years they've gotten better and better and better at digital fire, and the fire is fantastic. His flaming head in broad daylight looks like it's on fire.
And unequivocally.
And there's that scene where he's on the car and the wind is blowing the fire. Which just looks fantastic, you know?
Definitely.
So if you're a fan of special effects and you just want to see it for its effects work, or you're a big comic book geek, you might want to rent this and have a look at it and see what they've done to it. But quite frankly, I think that you're better off watching the original. As far as a film goes, you're better off watching the original.
I'd say absolutely, but I'm trying not to.
Fantastic. All right. Open the vault doors, dude.
Open the pod bay doors now. Let's see if this works.
Yay. Okay. See, it was Josh. He was blocking the door. All right, so we are in spoilers. So this, as usual, as as usual, the time codes will be in the show notes for the spoiler section. You can just fast forward this part if you don't want to hear anything. But from this moment onwards, we're going to talk some spoilers for the next 5 minutes or so. And can we just say that the bad guy, not Kieran Hines, but the guy who makes people go moldy?
Yes.
I really didn't like him.
Or you have the power of decay.
But it was not just the power of decay, and dark. Pardon? What the hell was that? And it was only dark sometimes. It's like his light switch didn't work.
Like I was saying, I've got the power of the dark. I just walk into a room and I flick the switch off.
Basically.
And if you live in Sydney, everything's going to go moldy.
And it didn't make sense because he would touch some things and they wouldn't decay, but other things, like, you know, look, hate Elektra all you want because Elektra isn't a very good movie. But when they did Typhoid Mary.
Yes.
They got it right. I mean, as she walked, everything died around her. You know what I mean? Mm. And I thought that was fantastic. And in this, everything around him should have been decaying. Mm. Everything he touched should have immediately started to fall apart, but it didn't. He was jumping on top of cars and stuff. Nothing was falling apart until he, I don't know, what, Wonder Twins power activated or something? You know, and it's like,
it was a bit of
Bing Ring, do your thing.
That's the one. There you go. So yes, and I agree with you. Kieran Hines looked like he was melting. And
yeah, it was kind of like it was kind of the same special effects artist who did Armie Hammer and J. Edgar. His face was just melting towards
That's awesome. Oh, that's terrific.
All the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah.
Now, we also have to talk a little bit. Now we're in spoilers. We're going to talk a little bit about plot because I didn't.
What plot?
Well, all right. What plot indeed? But I didn't understand the Christopher Lambert characters.
It's just. I think the script was actually tattooed to his forehead. Nicholas Cage was reading it off him. His face.
That's why he's reading. Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, like the whole thing was with that thing that they went off to those priests for some reason who were either. Now let me get this straight. They had the power to take away Nicholas Cage's curse or Ghost Rider's curse anyway, which they do temporarily.
Yeah, until the kid drops it back on him.
Yeah. But if they had that power to do that, yet they were taking that away. They were also actually evil, but they were.
But see, and that's what part I didn't understand was because all the way through it, Idris Elba is basically saying, "You're going to come and see my friends. I work for these people. They're awesome. They're brilliant. They're fantastic." You know. And then when he gets there, and they go, and they turn out that they want to kill the kid, he's like, "How can you do this?" It's like, "You didn't know that that's what these people did. I thought you worked for these people."
Did they just have a sudden change of heart while you went off to find the? Didn't they send you off to find the writer?
Exactly.
But unless they were using him, just because like their plan all along had been to.
Maybe Idris Elba was just the most gullible man on the planet.
He was the patsy.
He was the patsy. What can I tell you? His patsy with his little motorbike.
Actually, Idris Elba must have like is clearly a big comic book fan because he's been in Thor, he's been in this, and then I did just read somewhere else that he's going to be in another comic book adaptation.
I have no problem with that. I really like him. He's really cool.
Yeah, and I think I want to see him in more things. He wasn't given enough time in this film.
He wasn't given anything to do in this film. Except drink wine and get thrown off a bridge.
I mean, we're next going to see him in Prometheus.
That, yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah. He might get some screen time. Oh, that's a very big cast in Prometheus. He could be the first one to die. Can I just tell you that?
But if one thing Ridley Scott has demonstrated is that he's good at handling a large cast of actors... And,
Except in
Robin Hood.
Well, he couldn't handle anything in Robin Hood.
The one thing he demonstrated in Robin Hood was that maybe he should retire.
but then again, we wouldn't have had Prometheus. So we have to just pretend like Robin Hood didn't happen. It's like Wayne's World. Do over. Have you got?
Sometimes you wish that would happen in more films. Like the ending would just be.
Would you just look at the director to walk on?
Super happy ending.
You just have a director walk in at the end of a bad film and go, "Look, I'm really sorry. Let's try again."
Is there any more spoilers, David?
I don't think so. I thought you were going to throw in more than that. All right, let's get.
Oh, look, I can't be bothered. I'm opening. I'm just getting stuffy.
Let's get us out. Let's get us out of here. It's hot. Thank God the door worked. It was getting hot in there. All right.
The alarm was a little dodgy towards the end there, but it's all right.
All right. So we have a list of five, dude. We have five.
Oh, nobody told me that.
We have five of our favorite batshit performances. Now, this was actually harder than I thought, because you start going through performances and you start going, well, that's really crazy. And you go, but that's really not a batshit performance. It's kind of what the performance was meant to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's finding that grounds where the... And the way I started to actually equate it was, what if you took that actor out and put another actor in, and what would they have done? And that's kind of where I started to think about it, going, if you put a better actor in, or an actor who wasn't losing his shit, and you might have actually, it may have worked as a scene. So that's kind of how I looked at these, this list, thinking it's just that these interpretations where the actor just lost their friggin' minds. You
know? Now, before we start, because this list is very much a tribute to Nicolas Cage.
It is, yeah, very much.
There's a clip that's been floating around. It's had several million hits on YouTube called Nicolas Cage Losing His Shit. You've probably
fantastic.
Seen it.
I have. It's fantastic.
And I thought I'd play a little bit of a clip. The guy who put it together, his name is Harry Hanrahan, I think.
Right.
And so I thought I'd just play about a minute from the start of that. This is only a minute of a 4-minute clip, and there's more shit losing in this minute than you'll see in any other film. So here we go.
Put it in the right file according to alphabetical order. You know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G,
Peter.
H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P,
Peter.
Q, R, S, T, U, V. Do you ask my things? Huh?
What am I, a fucking retard man? Am I a fucking retard? Oh, I know what this is. You're trying to stop me up because of this lazy little man you beat around. Well, vive la fucking France, man! Someone's trying to kill me, man! The fucking hangers!
It never just goes away.
That goddamn contract is somewhere in the goddamn fucking files!
It never just goes away.
A, B, Z, D.
That, I actually have that entire clip lined up. I'm not going to play it now because you beat me to it. That's my favorite Nicolas Cage clip.
I just took a random minute from that.
that clip where he's doing the filing is from Vampire's Kiss, which is just... Is Nicolas Cage at his finest hour?
I think half the clips are from Vampire's Kiss, but there's a few others.
Yeah, I remember, let's just do this list and we'll see. I've actually made a promise to myself that I would only put Nicolas Cage on this list once, because it almost became the memorial Nicolas Cage
list.
Yeah,
no, I did the same thing.
So I only put him on this list once because there is obviously one standout Nicolas Cage for me that has to be put on this list, and I think we've already given a hint what that might be. But let's start at the bottom and say number five. I'm going to start, and I'm going to say my number five is actually from a Martin Scorsese film, funnily enough. It's actually from The King of Comedy back in the 80s. Sandra Bernhard, who is a whack job in herself, but plays this bizarro fan who is obsessed with the Jerry Lewis character. And there's a scene in it where she basically tries to seduce him while he's tied to a chair that is just outrageous. As only Sandra Bernhard could have done. Your number five.
I wanted to put something with Christopher Walken in it.
I tried, you know, but everything is just so Christopher Walken.
Well, that's the thing, that Christopher Walken has a very particular way of reading lines. So I went with Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, yeah, because, okay.
Because he kind of loses it a little bit in there. I almost, like, I thought Pulp Fiction, but that didn't really work out because that
I was actually thinking King of New York.
But King of New York was a good one, and I came very close.
There's
so
a couple of,
I want to put
of
kind
outbursts.
Of an honorary, you know, Sleepy Hollow / King of New York here at the end. I don't often join them together.
Yeah.
But that was just, I just kind of wanted to have that an honorary Christopher Walken slot. There.
Fair enough, fair enough. My number four is Dennis Hopper. And it was a real toss-up as to which one.
A little higher on my list.
Dennis Hopper is kind of the Nicolas Cage of his generation.
Yeah.
No, but I chose Blue Velvet because his baby wants to fuck scene is completely over the top and outrageous.
Well, hold that thought because it's a little higher on my list.
Okay. You're number four.
Before, I had to include Johnny Depp as well.
Yeah.
Because he's given some batshit performances over the last year. I mean, look, Jack Sparrow could have been one of them, but I ended up including Sweeney Todd.
Oh, good one. Good one.
Because it's kind of, he brings his very distinctive interpretation to that.
You know what? If there had only been one Pirates of the Caribbean film, Jack Sparrow would have been on the list.
Oh, if Jack Sparrow, hands down.
But the fact that there's been four says that that's a predetermined choice. You know
what Absolutely, I mean? Yeah. But Sweeney Todd, he took it definitely in his own direction, and I think it was a wild performance.
Pretty wild. All right, my number, what am I up to? Three. Look, it's an obvious choice, but it had to be here. No More Wire Hangers.
Oh, of course.
Faye Dunaway in Mommy Dearest. It just had to be there. This is probably the camp classic of camp classics. And truly fantastic.
Oh, no, it's brilliant.
It Absolutely. Is great. You're number three.
My number three is Gene Wilder in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
You lose!
I love my favorite line is, the anticipation is killing me. I hope it lasts. Yes. But he like, when there's that scene where in the tunnel.
Oh, man, he's muttering to himself. Yeah. Himself,
and then he just starts yelling. At the end of it, screaming. Apparently the children were actually genuinely frightened during that. He brought a lot of that character to the thing. Like the way it was written on page, like a lot of the stuff in that film where he walks out with a limp at the start and then does a roll and comes up, and he insisted on playing the character that way because he wanted, from that point onwards, he said, nothing you ever saw about that character you could believe.
Yeah.
And he really created that character from his own interpretation of the book and what was on the page as well. And if you watch a lot of those great documentaries that come with various recent editions of the film,
mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful Blu-ray, by the way.
Oh, I must get it. I really like the original Willy Wonka.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, again, Johnny Depp had his own crazy interpretation of the character. but I think it's Gene Wilder is a perfect example of pushing insanity just that little. And he does it so well so often. I mean, I always think of Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask, the Woody Allen film.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got one of the best crazy performances in that as well. but like, to me, that was one of my favorite Gene Wilder crazy moments.
No, I agree with you. I think that's a very good choice. I didn't even think about Willy Wonka. Very good. All right, my number two has got to go to, and I mentioned this last week because I rewatched it last week, and now we do this list, I have to actually bring it up. It has to go to Elizabeth Berkley for the hot tub scene in Showgirls because I don't know what the fuck she was doing.
It was, well, we know what she was doing, but it was...
Well, that ain't like any sex I've ever seen in my life. She was having some sort of epileptic stroke.
I want in on that. She was like that was mental.
You
that
know,
was
on a,
like,
you know, on a washing machine. You know, the central agitator. She was kind of like one of those. You know what I mean?
to quote Chris Rock, that was the Cirque du Soleil of pussy.
Oh, dearie me, what's your number two? Let's move off that.
my number two is, of course, Nicolas Cage.
Oh, here we go. And, all right.
All right. Well, we could have chosen from one of 50 films, but I chose Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Oh, good choice.
Because, you know, he's seeing iguanas. There's a scene in that film when one of the main reasons I chose it was like, shoot him again, his soul's still dancing.
We actually talked about that film. We reviewed it when it came out on Blu-ray. Josh and I way back, and we both love that film.
it is brilliant. Like, it is actually a brilliant film. I love it.
It's out of its tree on every level.
It's Wim Wenders. Werner Herzog.
It's the glorious madman, Werner Herzog.
Werner, I made the film traveling slowly down the
This is the man who, one of the reasons we actually chose to do the film was that just in a couple of weeks prior to that film coming out, the news had come out that he was opening his own film school. And they were teaching subjects such as how to shoot without permits, lock picking.
My favorite Werner Herzog moment is in a documentary he did last year or the year before, Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Oh, yes.
Where he, and I mean, I think we could dedicate.
Is this the one with the radioactive?
Which is just an honorary mention right now. Werner Herzog in any documentary that he's made.
In any interview, absolutely.
Any interview or documentary that he's been in, because he often includes himself in his documentaries. Like, you know, in Grizzly Man, where he's sitting there listening, going, this footage should not be heard. By you know, but in the end of Cave of Forgotten Dreams, he finds this, the cave, it's about this cave that's got some of the old cave paintings in it. Just down the stream, down the way, there's a nuclear power plant, and there's these albino crocodiles or alligators there. And he goes and decides to look at them for a while, because he's obviously filled up. You know, the first hour of the film fairly quickly, and he needs, because they only were given a very short amount of time to film in the caves. And so he looks at them and he goes, what would the crocodiles think if they saw the cave paintings? Maybe we are all crocodiles staring back through the abyss of time. And I thought, you know, maybe we are, Werner.
What I love, though, is the fact that he just made up the crocodiles. It's a documentary, but he just made them up. It's like, I don't know if you can call it a documentary when you start making shit up.
Yeah, well, no, the crocodiles were real.
No, he said he made them up.
Really?
Yeah, he said in an interview. I was watching an interview. He said he made them all up.
Oh, wow, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. He just felt like doing them. He thought that would be fun.
Well, look, no, bless him.
Bless him, man. The man is a lunatic.
I might even just drop my number one in favor of Werner Herzog.
I think we just make 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Werner Herzog. What do you think? No, the man is a bona fide lunatic. I love him. I love him. And there was actually a really funny, you know that book, Go the Fuck to Sleep?
Yeah.
There is actually, if you go on YouTube, you can find him reading it.
Oh, wonderful.
And it's hysterical because it actually makes the book sound evil. I want to go fuck to sleep.
Oh, God.
Anyway. All right. Love it. All right. So my number one, we've come to that moment, has got to be Vampire's Kiss. Has got to be Nicolas Cage. Has got to be a little bit of this. You've already played a bit of it, but it's got to be a little bit of this.
How could somebody misfile something? What could be easier? It's all alphabetical. You just put it in the right file. According to alphabetical order. You know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z! Huh? That's all you have to do!
That's right, that's all you have to do! I love this man. All right, so, and I guess I know what your number one is.
Yes, well, it's Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet, of course. You could almost choose any of Dennis Hopper's performances, but Daddy likes to fuck. He has to be in this.
It was a choice between that and Apocalypse Now.
Apocalypse Now. I've actually got a quick clip from Apocalypse Now. I'll see if I can play this. I'm just playing this straight off web browser, so I'm seeing if this is going to feed through into the soundboard. So let's, fingers crossed.
Yeah. No.
No, it's not.
No, go.
No go. But basically the thing is, what are they going to do when he's gone, man? They're going to say,
he's a big man. He's a big man.
He's kind, man. Bullshit, man. And he's got so many great lines in that. I mean, I don't think he was acting at that point.
No, I think he was pretty much drug rattled, just like everybody else on that set. but no, his performance in Apocalypse Now is amazing. But I think for pure batshit crazy,
Blue Velvet, hands down.
Blue Velvet.
He's got an oxygen mask throughout most of this film.
That character is just, he's not only he's batshit crazy, but he's as perverted as they come. He is one of Lynch's most amazing creations.
Oh, yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, this is, you know, this is pre-Twin Peaks. This is...
Yeah, well, this was Lynch basically reestablishing his career because he had The Elephant Man, which was brilliant, but really not Lynch. It was very straightforward filmmaking and a great masterpiece of a film. But then he did Dune, which was critically savaged and really didn't do very well at the box office. So he was really trying to recreate true Lynch, trying to recreate his career. And I think Blue Velvet is the perfect film for him. I mean, it's just, you look at it and just go, that's Lynch.
Mm.
And then he's just gotten stranger since.
Look, I'm going to say it, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so self-conscious now.
Don't be self-conscious. You're allowed to say whatever you want.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Right. Well.
All right. Well, that brings us to an end of that list. Boy, I think it took us longer to get through that list than it did when we have three of us.
We had more sound clips. And
that's true. All right.
And just one more time, Dave, because I have to do it.
Right.
What is it? What is it? What is it? What is that? What is that? Oh, no, not the beast! Not the beast!
All right. I think I need to go off and watch Vampire's Kiss again now. All right, let's wrap this puppy up. I think we've got a show here. It's about 55 minutes long. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's got the segments in it. That looks like a show. All right, so Richard, where can people... No, actually, before we do that, let's do the usual nonsense first. Say, if you agree or disagree with anything we have to say, keep it to yourself. No, if you agree or disagree with anything we have to say...
Send us an email with a lot of fuck in it.
That's right, and we'll definitely read it on air.
As Nicolas Cage.
Send your feedback to feedback@filmactually.com, or you can use a voicemail line and leave us a voicemail, and we'll play it on the air. And I was saying to Richard, if you guys don't start leaving me some voicemails, I'm going to get rid of the voicemail line. Cost me money. 0280113167 is the number, or use our Geek Actually ID on Skype. So it's all one word, Geek Actually, and you can leave us a voicemail. Try and keep it short, try and keep it on topic, and we will play you on the air because we love to hear what you guys sound like. Anything else? Oh, yeah, we have another show. You should always check out our Film Actually News. We record that just prior to doing this show, and it always comes out just like, well, this week it'll come out literally hours apart, but normally the day before, where we look at a roundup of the week's news in half an hour, and that's kind of fun to listen to as well. We also have Behind the Panels, our amazing kick-ass podcast all about comic books.
It's really good.
Call it Oprah's Book Club for Nerds. There you go. I love that.
You can call it Frank as long as we listen to it.
That's right. You can call me Betty.
Right? I'll be Veronica and we'll get Jughead in the middle.
Oh, you don't have the blush thing lined up, do you? See, that would have been perfect right there.
Oh, I could have. Well, I can.
Well, it's too late now. You missed the joke.
But I like jokes.
And it would have been a funny one had you made the cue.
Had I gone.
Archie and Veronica blush.
That's the one. All right. So you can find that on its own feed. Or we, of course, have the Geek Actually Super Feed, which has everything. And if you subscribe to that feed on iTunes, you'll get every show we do. Richard, where can people find out more about you on the internet?
They can find me at therealbits.com. That's the RELLbits.com. Or they can find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
Sure. Arg.
By the way, for those who don't know, we've been doing a Buffy moment.
we read a lot of Buffy.
We read a lot of Buffy for Behind the Panels this week, so we're a little bit Buffy crazy at the moment.
A little bit Buffalicious'd out at the moment.
Buffed out. No, that doesn't work either. I don't know. You can find me at geekactually.com, host of this show, or you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. We should also throw out that Josh is normally on this show, so we should say that you can find him at rawdlc.com, where he does his video game podcast, or at, oh God help me, hiphopnetonline.com. Is that right?
Well done, sir.
Thank you. It's a mouthful. he was desperately trying to get the plug-in on Behind the Panels, but we were running behind time, and I forgot. So we'll just say that you can find out my award-winning son. You heard me right.
Award-winning, you say?
I do. I'll tell you in a second. Find him at youtube.com/Nicky McVeigh. He just won an award for Smile, dude.
Oh, fantastic.
He entered it in a competition, and he won. So,
that's fantastic.
Some brick film competition that they have. These communities of brick filmers. Who knew that this was a world? You know. So
I feel very proud because I have a line in that, David.
It's really dark in here.
There you go.
Thank you. I have more than that line in there, but still.
Yeah, you also say,
Batman.
Yeah. So go check out his movies as well, because he's the award winning. This is actually his, what, second award, third award, something like that?
That's brilliant.
So he won an award. He won an award.
And how old is he?
According to YouTube, he's older.
Right, so there you go. So
because they have strange rules about age, but no, he's just pushing 13.
Well, there you go.
So he's done exceptionally well for himself, and if anybody's listening from YouTube, he's actually 42.
Look, the thing is, the only reason I mentioned it was just to say what an amazing achievement it is for someone who's so young, doing such great, brilliant stuff.
Absolutely, I agree. I think he's done really, really well for himself, and he just keeps turning them out. He's building sets right now for something else he's working on. So,
look, for anybody, regardless of age, he's doing an amazing achievement there. It's a great little short, and all of his stuff's good, so check it out.
Yeah, and also check out, we're actually going to embed them all as he's producing them. I've been a bit remiss in posting them, but he's been doing a series of short animated clips called Trailer Blips.
They're so good.
Which are hysterically funny, and he basically just, they're literally like 5 to 10 seconds long, and he's reinterpreting movie trailers.
Into the literal interpretations of titles, really.
Into like one gag, and pulling it off really well.
For example, his trailer for The Amazing Spider-Man featured Spider-Man saying,
"Hey, I'm amazing!" And he's put up a recent one, a new one, which is for War Horse, which is, it just cuts to a horse firing a machine gun. Which is just so beautiful. He's got one for Kick-Ass, which just says one Lego figure kicking the other one in the ass repeatedly.
I like this one for the Dark Knight Rises.
And Dark Knight Rises was very good too. And he also had obscure to anyone outside of this country, but he did one for Burning Man, which
right.
I love, because I also, I've got to grab that sound clip, because I actually did the yell for that. Which just basically has a guy on fire going, "Ah!" It's very funny. Anyway, so go check him out on YouTube. You won't be sorry. And he's always looking for subscribers. So subscribe to him. Watch his films. He'll be chuffed. All right. We got to get out of here. Just want to shout out to our friends very quickly. Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies. They do another movie podcast out there. They're a lot of fun. They drink a lot of tequila. Go find them at WeekendRonan.com or search for them on iTunes. And, of course, Charlie and Brad, our boys over at Rebound Radio, still putting out their podcasts. And too many to note, but you could watch Good Day Sir, or you could watch Movie Match Up, I think it's called, and they do some really good work over there. Charlie and Brad, they're our boys, man, so support them. Find them at reboundradio.com, or you search for their shows on iTunes as well. That's it. That's a show. We open the show, of course, with a clip from Con Air, which, if for those who don't remember, because it's been so long,
put the bunny back in the box.
That one. So we open with that clip. And we are actually going out with a clip. Now, I couldn't get the soundtrack to Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, and God help me, I don't think I want to pay for it anyway. But I do have the soundtrack to the first film. So we're going to go out with a track from Christopher Young's original score for the first Ghost Rider movie. So we'll play a little bit of that out. And Richard, have you got anything to add?
No, that's pretty much it.
Then in that case, I'm going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we will see you all next week. Bye, Richard.
Bye-bye.
I had just taken a breath. I was just about to roll into it.
I know.
All right. Now you're going to make me laugh. That's the problem. All right.